Carolyn Connors, Australia's foremost and prolific experimental vocal artist and one of my favourite artists of all time. I'm very, very happy to be in the studio with you today, Carolyn.
Hello, Leanne.
Thank you for joining us on Sisters Acousmatica. And yeah, I'm Leanne. I'm the training coordinators at 3CR and also a co-host of Apartment of Sound. But I'm actually mainly an avid fan of experimental music and the experimental musicians in Melbourne, of which I go out many times throughout the year to see amazing performances. And Carolyn, as I said, is one of my favourites. So I'm very happy that I was just able to have a personal experience of you performing in front of me. That's
yeah,
great.
I know. You're very close to me.
Yeah, yeah.
For me to do that at you.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. So, yeah, Carolyn, I have known you for a long time, for many years. I was just thinking on the way here that I probably have never asked you actually about your first forays into performing. Like, how did you get involved in performing? You've done so much. Like, you do theatre, you do bloody French chansons, you do accordion and piano and Broadway, and, you know, like, as well as the experimental stuff. Where did it all start?
The very, very, very beginning was my friend who lived 10 doors down the road had a piano in her house. Her mother was a piano player, and I'd go down and visit my friend, but I'd actually just jump on the piano and bang around till it got to the point where my friend, when she heard me at the door, would go lock the piano before letting me in the house so that I'd play with her and not play the piano.
Spend more time with her.
So I begged my parents for 2 years to play that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to play piano. And so after a couple of years, they bought me a piano and I had lessons. So I went through that really, really straight AMEB system of doing an exam a year and not really having many other influences. You know, it wasn't really a very musical family. But I kind of loved the sound world and also loved playing. My first professional job was as the piano player at the Lower Templestowe Calisthenics Club. So I'd go there, play piano. I think it was Wednesday afternoons for a whole year, and the repertoire included tie yellow ribbon round the old oak tree with 4-year-olds doing their swirly
stick things. I think I might have actually been in that calisthenics class.
And you know what? Bloody technology, like, it has been an issue all my bloody life. You know how I lost the job? A year later, they said, Carolyn, we've decided to use cassettes.
Oh, you're defunct.
So I got replaced by cassettes.
Oh, damn.
Damn. So that was my first professional job. And then I dropped out of a few uni courses as a pianist. I started 2 different courses, and for different reasons, I think, or various reasons, I didn't finish either of those. And played lots of different kinds of music, played accordion and piano. Mm. And then I started playing with a saxophone player, and he'd do gadoobly-doobly improvisations, and I would imitate him vocally and be able to do that. So I explored for quite a few years what my voice could do, completely separately from any gigs, really, or from very much gig pressure, and also in an enormous sort of bubble of freedom, because it wasn't what I was meant to be doing, because it wasn't my career or my interest or my, you know, it wasn't
your label.
Yeah, it wasn't any part of my definition. I was meant to be a piano player, and so I in the background I had all this musical training and understanding of how music's put together, but when I was using voice, there was nothing holding it down. And so I explored so I had singing lessons. I've always had them on and off, in the way that we all go to yoga classes or go to swimming, we'll go to dance. Dancers will go to dance classes. Singers will go to singing classes on and off all their lives. And alongside that, really experimenting a lot in my room, just where I could push the voice. Mm. And so I feel like it was sort of pre-internet days. So I feel I have a real ownership of that material in a way, because it wasn't in relation to any much influence. I started discovering other singers, but who would did really great stuff with their voices. But the stuff I was doing came from what I found that my body could do. Mm. So I have a real ownership of internally. I own that. Which I think is harder to do now with the internet, because you instantly have access to all the best stuff. And that that is both incredibly inspiring and can be quite deflating as well, because those people you're hearing have spent their lives working at stuff.
Mm. Mm. And what about, does that also affect kind of your creativity in a way, if you are thinking, oh, someone's already done this, or
yes,
that, you know, like, and if you're sort of not aware of what people are doing, as you say, you can experiment more,
yeah,
without that worry
and feel the ownership of it. Feel like that's my stuff, yeah. Mm. And then I started doing solo shows, vocal shows, and working with other people as well. Actually, improvising, always within an improvising structure, or as an improvising processes, but. Sometimes I'd actually work with quite a lot of structure, so I'd decide what territories I'd be in, or what the, you know, decide a whole lot of stuff before improvising. So often not totally free improvising.
I know you've been involved in performing and music for how many years, like 30 years or so. What have been some of the highlights that stand out for you? Because that's quite a varied... history that you've had?
It's more like the favourite gig. Like sometimes that thing of being in the right size, where the scale is right, where the room's the right size for the size of the performance, the audience is engaged and what I want to do works. Mm. They're my favourite performances. I did one at early on, I did a performance at Melbourne University in the hall there, in the hall, I can't remember what it's called.
Melba?
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
And because it was such a formal setting, I was doing all this sort of noisy voice stuff, and people were literally rocking back and forwards, holding their stomachs, trying not to laugh because they
didn't get it.
Well, they didn't get it, or they felt like it was funny, and then someone exploded. You know that thing where it's like the valve popped? And I loved that. I don't try to be funny in a way. I probably shouldn't even talk about it. But I think applause and laughter, and there's all sorts of things we do that are these moments where we're uninhibited.
They're spontaneous.
Totally spontaneous. Sort of despite your mind, your body does this thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes...
I'm one of those audience.
Yeah. And it's really, engagement with the audience is really important for me. Mm. So a real flavour of what I've done has been live rather than recorded work. And so I've made a number of works that are for solo voice that have been in theatres. And kind of worked with the idea of theatre for listening to. So when we go to the theatre, normally we get a lot of information from dialogue or words and from costume and sets. And I've tried to work a lot with sound conveying meaning, so not actually text, but actual. So theatre for listening to, so where the voice is the foremost object. As a way of being guided through a performance. Yes.
I've really, like, one thing that stands out to me about you, your practice, is the way in which you are able, and I don't know whether it's a conscious thing that you do or whether it's just your creative process, but you change what you do all the time. Like there are really amazing artists, as we know, that can produce, you know, a piece or whatever, and time again you might see them do something similar because it's really great. But you actually also just change up what you do. Change the form, you use different instruments, you use your body differently, you're never static, and it's actually incredible what you that's what I find really interesting about what you do. It just is constantly something new and interesting every time.
There's a way I think I have of describing that, which has been when I was a kid, I was learning the piano, and then when I was in my 20s, I've been through these different phases. Then I went, I'm a musician. And then when I started thinking about placing sound in different contexts and working beyond just sitting there playing an instrument, I went, well, I'm a performer. And then about 10 or 15 years ago, I arrived at very strongly a feeling that I'm an artist. And each of those roles have very different outcomes from being a student of an instrument, being a player, like being a musician, then being a performer, which is like, yes, I'm actually a living, breathing thing on stage. It's not just the instrument, but it's somehow engaged with me as an artist, as a performer. And then as an artist, there's freedoms and also responsibilities too. So as an artist, I actually don't have to be a great musician every time I play. And that's interesting. And so occasionally I do really dud gigs. You know, sometimes I do gigs where I go, and everyone who was there and everyone who knows, but go, that wasn't one of your best things. And that's the outcome of being an artist, where part of that moving through the world as an artist is to be looking forward or looking right now at what you're doing and what you're interested in.
You're trying an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because it interests you,
yeah.
And you're just trying that idea or.
Whereas musicians, you know, it's a different job. You want to get, I want to be great too, but it doesn't always work that way if you're trying new stuff.
Mm.
And then I work a lot in other people's work, so I'm invited to be a performer or collaborator in someone else's work, and I have to work really hard at knowing how much I engage in that.
How did you, just out of interest, how did you find Broadway?
It was amazing.
Can you tell people what you did on Broadway? Just because it's a you know, wacky thing that you did.
I actually think there's a music theatre woman out there somewhere who went, that was my job. How come I didn't? Like, it's like I traded places with someone for a year and a half accidentally. It's like I walked into the wrong audition or something. Anyway, I ended up being the lead in a show called Still Awake Still that ended up touring all around Australia and went to the US, and we had 2 weeks on Broadway, about four doors from Times Square. And it was in winter, in the snow in New York, and it was incredible.
Yeah.
Incredibly stressful too.
Mm.
But and we went when the show wasn't really worked in. It would have been better if we'd gone a sort of year later in a way, but anyway, that was beyond my control, all that. But it was great. It was incredible. Incredible.
Yeah. So you have that versatility of being able to work in that kind of like really structured, you know, like theatre environment, and then get up at the Make It Up Club and put a bag on your head and do something wacky with that, or a piece of foil. And one of my favourite performances of yours has also recently been where you've had the little squeeze box and you've shaken your whole body whilst using that too. That was incredible.
So I'm doing two of those before. I'm doing one at Make It Up Club next month, I think, where I'll be doing that. And I'm also there's a festival called Avant Whatever. It's the first festival. And I'll be doing one of those accordion pieces there as well.
Well, I highly encourage listeners to get along and see that, because it's etched in my memory as one of my favourite gigs. So we're going to wrap up our conversation. Thank you for joining us on 3CR and Sisters Acousmatica.
Oh, it's such an honour to be invited. Thank you so much.
No, it's wonderful to have you. We're going to head out with Carolyn doing another short piece. That was vocal artist extraordinaire Carolyn Connors in conversation with me, Leanne McLean, for Sisters Acousmatica on 3CR.